Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
It is time for our monthly catch-up with Kirsten Simpson. Our vet will join us each month to talk about any questions you have on your pets, or indeed look at some of the big topics, the big stories around looking after our animals. And Kirsten is with us today. Thank you for joining us, Kirsten.
Hi, no worries.
Let's start things off then with a look at, well, the weather, I suppose. You know, for some areas of the country, it has been incredibly warm, and that has an effect on many of our furry friends.
Yeah, totally. I know. I mean, sadly not up in Scotland much, unfortunately. Sun and heat, I think, because we're not used to it up here in generally anyway, then when it's a nice day, take a dog out, go for a run, all those kind of things, they can overheat quite easily because they can only pant to exchange heat. They can't sweat how we can sweat, so they can get very hot very quickly.
So making sure your pets have plenty of fresh, cool water?
Yeah, fresh, cool water, fresh rest, just like you would do yourself. You know, come in the shade for a bit as well. Don't let them sort of do too much at once because they can get sort of heat stroke, how we can do it as well.
Are there things you should look for then to, you know, alert you to signs that they are maybe overheating?
Obviously, excessively panting to the extent where you're very concerned about them actually breathing in general, drooling, like slobbery drool, like they're trying to sort of like pant so much they can't swallow properly as well. And obviously collapsing, that would be quite a serious sign that something wasn't quite right.
Okay, so looking out for those, keeping them well watered and out of the direct sunlight. Now, another point around their hot weather as well is I wasn't aware how susceptible, say, cats or dogs can be to very strong sunlight, sunburn and so on.
Yeah, obviously, it seems in humans, it's the more kind of paler varieties, so like white cats or white dogs or ones that have kind of white ear tips. More so in cats for the nastiness long term, they can get sunburn, and long term it can change the cells in their ears. They can get quite nasty skin cancer on the ears or on the tips of the nose as well. So, yeah.
What about dogs, especially the wet nose? Are they quite prone in that area?
Well, anywhere that's got kind of paler skin, so the nose, the ears, sometimes the eyelids and that as well, they're the most kind of common areas. And you can actually buy dog and cat suntan lotion as well.
Oh, that's nice. How lovely. And a nice brimmed hat as well if
yeah,
you're going
out
and about. Okay, so a little bit on the weather there. Now, something which does crop up from time to time, we had some photographs in the press earlier in the month with Prince George feeding his dog an ice cream on a lovely warm day. But
yeah.
Some animal charities were saying, you know, we should really be very cautious about human food for our pets.
Yeah, I think that was a bit blown out of proportion slightly. I'm sure most folk know that, you know, if you give a dog an ice cream, like, you know, every so often as a treat, it's fine, but not as a general day-to-day meal, that's okay. But yeah, there are some human foods that dogs and cats shouldn't get. I think most folk know now about the more common ones that we worry about. So the three most common ones would be obviously chocolate. So really, really dark chocolate's the worst, and then milk chocolate's the next worst. And also you get onions and grapes or raisins are the next two in line, I would say, that are the most kind of common toxicities that we would see there. Can be quite concerning if they ingest a small or large amount of them.
I wouldn't have thought that things like grapes or raisins would have been dangerous, so that's quite a new one for me.
Yeah, no, I know friends that are like, oh, I've had my dogs grapes for years. The worry is they don't quite know how much they have to eat to be bad. We've had dogs that have eaten grapes for years and be totally fine, and then some dogs had a handful of grapes and they go into kidney failure. So they don't quite know what dog gets it and what, so we have to kind of be blanket quite concerned about it and make folk aware of that.
Is it quite easy to find out that the do's and don'ts if you're straying away from your traditional dog or pet foods?
Yeah, there are quite a few good websites out there as well. I mean, the Poison Services do sort of a newsletter on that online as well for most folk to read too. So if any doubt, even just a quick Google, and most of the time it'll be pretty much correct. Or any concerns, phone your vets and say, can I make my dog this to eat? And they'll say yes or no.
As I said, our listeners can get in touch, Kirsten, and pose you some questions. Now, Lindsay Cleland has been in touch. She is looking to get a kitten for the first time, or a cat. She's going to go to her, possibly a cat and dog home, have a look what's there, maybe a breeder as well. She's not too sure about getting a young cat, an older cat. But if she was to go for a kitten, what she should be looking out for, and what are the kind of the annual things you do, you know, vaccinations, flea treatments, that kind of thing?
With puppies, you get them quite young, about kind of 8 weeks of age. With most kittens, you should be getting them around about kind of like 9, 10, 11, even a little bit older. Because if it's from a fancy breeder, they tend to keep them until about kind of 12 weeks of age to make sure they've had both the vaccinations. If it's a normal kind of run-the-mill moggy, then about kind of 9 weeks is pretty much a-okay. Because cats get taught a lot more from their mum, like what to do, you know, like toilet training and how to behave around humans. So if you get them when they're a little bit too young, we find they're a little bit quite bitey and scratchy. And they're a bit kind of, not feral, but a bit more kind of wilder because they haven't been taught taught manners properly by their mum. So, I mean, obviously, same as in puppies, you'd make sure that they're happy with the mum. The mum looked healthy. They were quite happy. You know, nice clean eyes, clean mouths, clean ears, happy and bright and running around, doing normal things. Things you have to look into, obviously, vaccinations and that. There's two kinds of vaccinations for cats, and that if they're going to be an indoor cat, they get the basic vaccination. If they're going to go outdoors and do a lot outdoors, like hunting and prowling around outside and being out overnight, they'd be advising them to get the outdoor vaccination as well, to protect against feeling the leukemia virus, which can be quite nasty and quite serious.
Okay, and flea treatments as well?
I mean, indoor cats, maybe not so much. It's personal preference. We always advise what the companies say. They say every sort of like, you know, month, 2 months is pretty much A-okay. But outdoor cats, I definitely would do, because they're obviously going out, other cats, dead animals, eating things. So yes. Yeah, I could get fleas very easily.
On the flea thing, actually, I suppose this is probably relevant for dogs as well. But do cats get like kind of allergies to flea bites?
Yeah, no, definitely can do. Yeah, flea allergic dermatitis is quite a common thing you see. Again, yeah, more so in cats than in dogs, but both can get it. And it's more actually an allergy to the flea saliva. So the fleas can live in them fine, but when they bite them, obviously they bite them and they sort of spit into the bite to make it more liquid to drink it up. And that's what causes the reaction. So they get all quite scabby and quite itchy. And it's usually around about their bottom or around the back of their head, around about the face. We have one cat that comes and he gets like, you brush him through, find no fleas, but obviously he's been bitten, because sometimes you do find all kind of flea dirt in him, but he just reacts so dramatically to it as well. His whole skin flares up and it's quite sad.
Okay, so things to look out for there. If you do have any questions for Kirsten, then do get in touch with us. You can tweet, we're at RNIB Radio. If you want to drop us an email, it's RNIB Connect Radio at rnib.org.uk, or you can call us on 0141 357 3518. And we'll catch up with you again next month, Kirsten.
Cool, no worries, bye.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.